Okay, good morning, everybody. Good morning. We're going to start, so we can finish. Yeah.
Pen, I'll check.
There's a ton of pens here if you don't have. Okay.
So
we're going to talk today about the topic called Emunat Chachamim. Emunat Chachamim, translated literally, faith in our sages. Okay? Which is somewhat fraught, somewhat complicated, because as we're going to see in the Chumash, that there's a demand for Emunat Chachamim, but the limit of it or the extent of it is a little bit unclear. And I would say, especially in the times in which we live, it becomes even more complicated. There's a concept in that you might have heard called Das Torah. Have you ever heard of that? Da Torah, but nobody says it Da Torah because it's more of a Haredi thing. Das Torah. Okay, you're familiar with this term? Okay, you are good. What does it mean?
Oh, yeah.
You got to seek a rabbinic opinion on a subject.
Everybody believes in that, to ask the rabbi, don't they? Everybody believes in that, I think. That's not Das Torah.
It's maybe...
It's like you don't do anything without
Das Torah.
Don't do anything without asking.
Outlook,
that's a different
outlook,
extent. Das Torah, right, is even more than that. That Das Torah means that the rabbi... That the gadol, when the gadol expresses his opinion on a certain matter, why? Think about that. The term dat Torah.
It's based on Torah.
That's not the same. That's not what dat Torah. You're close, but think about what does dat Torah mean? The literal words.
The opinion of the Torah.
Right. I.e., the Torah has an opinion, and the rabbi's expression of whatever he says is the opinion of the Torah. That's a very, you understand that the term Das Torah is a very extreme formulation of Emunat Chachamim. Extremely extreme, because, like, what happened to debate? Right, what happened to Shivim Panim in the Torah? What about Machloket? Do we believe in this concept of Da Torah today? It's a very interesting question. And especially in light of the fact that today, like, we suffer, Judaism suffers from a lack of Emunat Chachamim to a very strong degree. Like, we live in a world of democratization to such a degree that there's no such thing as authority anymore. We very much don't defer to authority. And democratization of information as well. Like, I was at a friend on Facebook, a guy I know. He didn't mean this in a bad way at all. He really didn't mean it. He sent out the following question. The question was, I was making a fleishig, a puff pastry, in a Pyrex pan, pastry in an oven, and at the same time I was making some kind of dough in a Pyrex pan. What's the halachic status of the dough? Discuss. Now, just so you know, like, he didn't mean it maliciously at all. He really didn't. He was. It's a complicated question. But, like, I was just wondering, like, if I was, I don't know, like, say your husband, right? And I said, you know, the possibility of a new medicine receiving FDA approval. Discuss. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are certain areas where pretty much everybody agrees that people need a level of expertise in order to have an informed opinion. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying, you know, that I love these curtains. Discuss. That's great. But, like, it's a complicated issue, you know. Is it Ben Yoma or Anu Ben Yoma?
Maybe all his friends are rabbis.
No. Okay. He's a nice guy.
A lot of people think that they have professional opinions in lots of areas where they don't.
But especially in Judea, an area of Judea, and especially in the area of halacha. Especially in the area of halacha.
I think you would just ask a rabbi.
What?
Especially among Ashkenazi.
Is it more Ashkenazi?
Much more.
Right? Nobody stands out and says, I have a rash on my arm. It looks a little bit red on the outskirts. Discuss. You know what I'm saying? Like, they do look on the internet, but they don't treat themselves. But especially when it comes to halakha, it hurts us. Because the more democratization, and this guy, by the way, I want to say explicitly, he's a wonderful guy. He didn't mean it that way. He thought it was an interesting question. He did. Like, and it is an interesting question. But it's an interesting question only if you have knowledge and are able to discuss it. You know what I'm saying? Only if you really have some knowledge. It's very, like, some of these questions are very complicated. Is the pot okay? Is the pan okay? Is it davar yavesh? Is there steam coming out? How hot was the oven? These are very complicated questions, which is fine. That's why people have expertise. That's why you turn to them for knowledge. But we live in a time where we no longer believe in expertise. And if culture doesn't give status to a person of expertise, a person of stature, when we live in a religion, when Yahadut teaches us the idea of religious authority, so then it comes into contact. And that what I'm trying to say is, and I think this is relevant to my Elul theme that I'm going to try to develop, just different themes about working on ourselves through Elul, it makes it difficult to if we live in a rabbinic religion, like Orthodoxy is a rabbinic religion. And as culture questions the validity of authority, then it makes us internally, it raises questions in our mind, to what degree do we have to listen, and to what degree do they have status, and to what degree do they have authority, et cetera, et cetera. Even subconsciously, not consciously.
There's a difference when you're asking for a halachic opinion, and you're looking for, say, who should we vote for in the next election?
That's a halachic question?
No, but that's what I'm saying. Like, Das Torah, or Das Torah is sometimes extended to EP. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know what, sometimes I think when people talk about, like, the rabbi's opinions of Das Torah, they don't talk about halacha. Necessarily, sometimes. Meaning, like, if you're talking about, you know, because the dough inflation, that there is a black and white answer, or maybe there's a purple. but there is, as you say, experts will probably tend to something that they agree with, and those charts we have, like, you know, the Venn diagrams. Like, there's like something. It will be an area where people agree on.
Correct.
Right. But when it comes to Das Torah about other things that are more like social political issues,
uh-huh.
I think there's much more room for discussion for people to disagree, even the experts.
First of all, I agree with you.
Yeah.
But my point isn't about a specific issue. My point is that if an atmosphere of lack of authority, of democratization of ideas, of the internet can answer everything, okay, especially when it comes to religion, when you know what I'm saying? It becomes difficult to be subservient to the idea of authority. Even when you want to buck up against that authority.
But
you know, the example that I give personally, my example personally is, I very much want to go up to Har HaBayit. I think it's really important to go up to Har HaBayit. I spoke about going up to Har HaBayit when I was in a shul in Michigan. I gave a really fiery speech. I was really passionate about it. A guy came up to me and said, a member of the shul, and said, if you will come with me to Har HaBayit, I will fly with you to Har HaBayit. I'll fly with you to Israel. And I'm going to give a rabbi a free trip to Israel. Let's go. Called up my rabbi name, and they said, we don't think you should go. No. Yeah. Rabbis who I really respect. And so I don't go. Despite the fact that I really feel that I should. Why? Because there's a level of subservience. You know, even after I gave the whole speech. So the guy went. He went up a number of times. You know? Like, it's interesting. My children asked me, and my sons asked me, what should I do? I said, you have your rabbanim. I'm not, what? Ask your rab. And follow the opinion of your rab. But that's what we should teach. Yeah, I'm sorry. You wanted to say something, Daniela. And then we'll do some chumash.
No,
this is really relevant to the discussion.
You say, if you do get a rash, what do? You look it up in Google. Before you go to the doctor. Then you get all hysterical and you get into a panic because you discover you're dying. And then you go to the doctor and you just put on a bit of cream.
Exactly.
So true.
Yeah.
It's so more true than... Oh, yeah, so true. Okay. We're now, so I'm going to discuss this in Shoftim, Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Chet. There's a short section that's actually a critical section for basically the essence of what our religion is all about. It sounds a little bit hyperbolic, but it's really not. It's really the essence of what Rabbinic Judaism, what Torah Judaism is all about. Yud Zayin Chet in Shoftim. Yud Zayin 17:8. Everybody have it? Ki Yipalei Mimcha? Okay. Ki Yipalei Mimcha Davar LaMishpat. Bein dam ledam, bein din ledin, ubein nega lanega, divrei rivot bisharecha, vekamta ve'alita el ha'makom asher yivchar Hashem Elokecha bo. Let's translate. Ki yipalei mimcha. Okay, what does yipalei mean from the word?
Wonder.
Pele, hafla'a. Okay, it's interesting. One of the books of the Rambam is called Hafla'a. He named it. Pele today means wonder. Is that what it means in the Torah? Let's translate. Ki yipalei mimcha davar lamishpat. If something should be wondrous to you, does that make sense in the context of the pasuk? Yeah. Okay.
Oxford,
meaning what?
Oxford translated as if a matter of judgment is
hidden. Hidden is not wondrous. Okay. Wondrous would be strange. Pele. Right? Today we would say that is a, or in other ways, when we mean something nifla, is that the same word?
Yeah.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay. Here, look at, if you look at unculus, see what he says. You don't have to understand all the words. Are yitkese minach pitkama ledina. Are means when? Yitkese minach. Hidden. Okay? Ki yipale mimcha. When a matter is hidden from you. So there's two interpretations that I have in the Midrash that I found. The first one is based on that one Midrash. Ein plia elaksia. Yitkese. It's covered from you. And the second one is, okay? Yipale mimcha. Magid shebimufla gadol meule yipale mimcha. It's wondrous. It's above you. It's higher than you. Hi, morning. Okay, yipale mimcha hadavar. When it's higher from you, okay. When it's higher than you, it's greater than you. Lamishpat bein dam ledam, between blood and other blood. Bein din ledin, between just judgment and judgment. Bein nega la nega, okay. Plague or plague. Nega is usually Tzaraat, yeah. Right? That's what you're thinking of. Divrei rivot bisharecha. Okay? Matters of dispute in your gates. Divrei rivot. You have chumash in here. I put on the table.
Thank you.
Okay? Matters of revolt, of dispute. Bisharecha in your gates. V'kamta ve'alita al nishago ela makom eshivchar Hashem alokecha bo. Let's look at Rashi. Rashi is very important. Rashi is classic Midrash. Okay? Rashi says, ki yipale, kol hafla'a lashon havdala uprisha. It's separation and distinctness. Shadavar nivdal u'mechuse mimcha. So Rashi goes in the direction of unklus and the midrash. It's hidden from you. It's separate from you. Dam ledam, Rashi says, bein dam tamei ledam tahor. Right? You have, basically, what is it? It's a shaila. I see dam. There's a blood in my chicken. There's blood in my eggs. You know what I'm saying? Or blood, you know what I'm saying? There's a stain. And I don't know, is it kosher or is it not kosher? Bein din l'din. Bein din zakai l'din chayav. Bein nega l'nega. Bein nega tamei l'nega tahor. So it's interesting. What is it? Divrei rivot. Shiyu chachmei ha'ir chokim bedavar. Who's fighting?
The rabbis.
The rabbis. Who could it have been fighting?
It's not the people.
Oh, right. Rashi says, it's, but it could be either one. Okay? Where are you going? The Torah says, "Ela makom asher yivchar Hashem elokecha bo." What is Rashi talking about? Why are you going to the makom asher yivchar Hashem elokecha bo? Where is this makom? Where is this place? Why would you go to the Beit HaMikdash?
For answers.
For answers? To bring a korban. Anybody else?
To pray for answers.
To pray for answers. Okay. So the answer is, Rashi says,
Sanhedrin.
Sanhedrin. What?
The Sanhedrin's in there.
The Sanhedrin is in there. Right. So little known in our... Should I bring in the picture? Take it off the wall. Okay. In our picture of the Beit HaMikdash. Hold on a second. Many people don't realize... I lost my shoe. Get up and get it, whatever. Okay? Many people don't realize that I bought this for 10 shekel from an Arab vendor in 1989 outside. I always love this picture. Okay? This is Harabait. Beit HaMikdash. Where's the Kotel? Right here. Right? This is called the Lishkat HaGazit. Lishkat HaGazit, I don't know, the office of the Gazit, I have no idea what that means. Who sat in Lishkat HaGazit? The Sanhedrin. The highest court in the land always sat at the same place on Har HaBayit adjacent to the Beit HaMikdash. I.e., there's a direct connection, a direct correlation between the Makom HaAvodah, the place that you worship, and the place of justice and judgment. Right? Which is critical. Okay, so what kind of laws... What gets to Lishkat HaKazit? V'kamta ve'alita, according to Rashi. What's getting up there? Okay, which laws?
Ones in the lower courts can't read.
Obviously, right. There's a system of courts. Ki yipalei mimcha davar lamishpat. Okay, in the pshat, what it means is, you have dam l'dam, din l'din, okay, divrei rivod. What are they fighting about? Halachic fighting. They're fighting about either dam, dam, din, din. It's interesting. It's not talking, it doesn't seem like it is talking about just, you know, interpersonal squabbles. But nonetheless, what the Torah is saying is, v'kamta v'alita, you should then go up, go make aliyah, go ole, ela makom ashiyivchar Hashem elokecha bo, to that place, ubata el ha-kohanim ha-levi'im ve'el ha-shofet asher yeh bayamim ha-hem, v'darashta, v'higidu lecha et devar ha-mishpat. And you should come to the place of the Kohanim and the Levim and the Shofet, the judge that was in that in those days, and he will be Doresh, he will seek out and tell you a Devar Mishpat. So first of all, it's very fascinating, I have to say. We just had a Kotel tour. They now have a second tour in the Kotel Tanis, if you go to their website. It's called Me'achrei HaKlaim, behind the scenes. And they divided the tour into two. And so there's two parts of it. You know, like in the back of the Kotel, there's this closed-off area where you can, you know what I'm saying, where the sukkah is? And behind there's like steps you can climb down. So that's very cool. They have like dugout areas from the Bayit Sheni, Bayit Rishon. It's like really crazy. In addition, when you go down into the tunnels, they'll take you even deeper. And so the guide, he took us into this room. And it's like he shows you all the architecture of the room. And the room is much fancier than you'd expect. He's showing you like it was built with this and with that, and you know. So his punchline, he believed that the room was built in such a way, he thought that it was the place of the Sanhedrin when the Sanhedrin was exiled to Lishkat HaGazit before the Churban Bayit Sheni, that they took this room and made it into the Sanhedrin. Why? Because the rule is that you can only do dan dinei nefashot, you can only do capital punishment when the Sanhedrin sits in Lishkat HaGazit. But there were too many murders going on, whatever. So the Gemara says that they moved, the Sanhedrin made a decision to move out of Lishkat HaGazit. That place has a status, has a critical status that gives the shoftim, that gives justices, that gives them a certain stature from which judgment comes. So you go to that place, okay, and v'darashta v'higidu l'chai d'var mishpat. And they do doresh, and they do drishta, and they tell you, what they decide. What's interesting about that pasuk? Let's read the pasuk again. You'll tell me there's definitely superfluous words according to all the mefarshim. Okay. Ubata lekohanim alavim ve'al shofet asher yeh bayamim ahem v'darashta v'gidu l'chai d'var mishpat. What's unusual and superfluous?
Why are you going to the kohanim and the
levim? Okay. Interesting. So Chazal say based on that it's important that kohanim and levim also be part. That it's ideal that they should be part of the marechet hamishpat. They were considered spiritual leaders. It would not be unusual for the Kohanim and the Levim to be the most learned. Why?
They didn't have to work.
Correct. Correct. They were religious leadership, so there's no reason why they shouldn't also serve as judges. They couldn't serve as a political leadership. Why not? El HaShofet. What's interesting? The word Chazal all stick on is Asher Yeh Bayamim Hahem.
Why is it there?
Why? So why shouldn't it be there?
All time, no?
Right. Obviously, Chazal say, when else are you going to go? Like, who else are you going to go to? You're going to go to, like, Rabbi Kiva Eger 200 years ago? You know, you can only go to whoever you have. Look at Rashi. It says, Rashi, v'afilu eino kishar shoftim shahayu lefanav. This is typical. Even if it's not like all of the shoftim that came before, atzat tzarich lishmo alo. Ein lecha ela shofet b'yamecha. You'll say, rabbis today, they're not like the rabbis of earlier generations. You know what?
Or the trend to now.
They're not. But, yeah.
Like now there's a trend to go back and say, oh, but there was a minority opinion 200 years ago that wasn't followed, or even a majority opinion 200 years ago that wasn't followed, and we took the minority route. We should go back and, like, go back to that crossroads and take the other road.
This actually goes back to what we spoke about, the plethora of information that's available, that somebody will find some tshuva by a rabbi, literally, like, 150 years ago, it was never accepted in consensus, but now that you have these great, great, you know, online compendiums, you know, with a little bit of doctoral research, like, oh, I found an authority that says, you know, the great example, the classic example is, we found an authority, Rav Mashash, who in Syria sometimes said, you know, women don't have to cover their hair. Right? He didn't really say it, and he also wasn't considered a rabbinic authority, and his opinion wasn't accepted. and it was a shat atchak, etc., etc. But it became this whole to-do, and now there's a posek I can follow. Why? Because freedom of information. I'll find it for you. I don't want to quote with that. We had an article about it. I'll find it for you. Right? Whatever. It was a women's journal put up by the Bar Ilan and Beit Midrash when they ripped it apart, basically. But anyway, but that's very common nowadays. So there was a rabbi, like you said, 200 years ago, and he said such and such, and therefore we should follow his authority. Says Rashi, Ein lecha ela shofet
b'yamecha. It seems to be implying that anything that's a previous opinion, whether it was a majority accepted or not, that you should, I don't know, maybe this is my interpretation, but you should be following just contemporary opinion.
What, but generally, what's contemporary opinion ruling? Generally, almost always.
No, but
right.
It's also based, it's usually based on precedent, right, on case law. They don't just make up a new...
Of course, but I'm saying it seems like it's not only that you say that you can't accept opinions that were minor and never accepted 200 years ago,
mm-hmm.
even if, you know, everything seems to be... Yes, if there's something that's following history, so that's one thing, but you're saying all opinions need to be taken in the current time and not previous time.
I would agree with that. I think that's absolutely true, because the job of a posek is to say, right, here's all the information that's in front of me, here's all the historical information, and now I have to apply it to the situation today. Right? The situation in which we live is vastly different than even 20 years ago, 50 years ago. Think about, you know what I'm saying?
So if I live in America and I'm curious about how this journal, I can't say, well, I know Ruffin Stone said that then. I mean, I have to get a current opinion.
You don't have to. There are poskim today that are paskening. You're not asking. You're asking. You know that the OU in general gives kashrut to non-chalav Yisrael items, right? Relying on that on his psak. So they're very smart people. Rabbi Schechter, who's the posek for the OU now, he's reevaluating, and I'm sure they've asked him, and he says, yeah, I think we can rely on that psak. It's certainly a reliable psak for now. I think you always need a contemporary posek. You know what I'm saying? We don't reevaluate and re-question things all the time. But questions come up all the time. I actually brought this newspaper. Are you all familiar with the Se'arat HaRakevet, the Tachanat HaRakevet, the Shabbat Bruhaha? That's a very complicated issue. It's a really complicated issue. For those of you who are listening at home in America or like 5 years from now, okay? So they're redoing the train station in Tel Aviv. They're widening the train station in Tel Aviv, which is great. The only problem is they had to shut down the Ayalon Highway in order to put tracks over the Ayalon Highway. And they had to shut down the Ayalon for a day. So they decided to do it on Shabbat. Now, the question is, that a halachic question or a political question?
Both.
Right. You know.
Was it one day or was this going to carry on?
One day.
Oh.
One day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, and afterwards, the real question was, why did only the Haredim make a bruhaha about Chilul Shabbat? Why didn't the religious Zionists make a bruhaha as well? Which is true. Like, why is it, well, we don't believe in Shmirat Shabbat the same way that they believe in Shmirat Shabbat? Right? But the question is the bruhaha a political decision or a halachic decision?
Well, even from a halachic decision, there were people who were saying, look, this is, 200 people are going to be working on the train for one day, but no one is going to be forced to do it. They're all going to choose to do it. Whereas if we shut it down on Sunday,
okay,
right, when all the chayalim have to go to the...
Do it on a Wednesday. Pick a Wednesday.
Yeah, or anything.
Yeah, they did. But it caused such that...
Oh, wait a second. If I do not, those interesting questions, are fascinating questions. Do I permit Chilul Shabbat because I'm afraid that people would be upset at the datiyim? Or, like, it wasn't pikuach nefesh, it was inconvenient. So we all agree that we don't violate the Shabbat because it's inconvenient, because if we did, then we would never be Shomer Shabbat. You know what I'm saying? There's no buses in Yerushalayim. It's inconvenient for a lot of people. Is it not?
They've got used to it. I mean,
No, they haven't. You ask them. They're not used to it at all. We believe that the state should have its tzivyon of a Jewish... You know what I'm saying? So you could say, well, what's interesting is, in Israel, there's a very important term that you'll see all the time. If you follow any debate about religion and state in Israel, we'll have a very important term. Anybody know what it is?
Jewish and democratic.
No, they say that already. But the term you'll see all the time, status quo. Status quo. Status quo. I actually gave a course on this, and I started the course with the status quo letter. And everybody claims that the other guy is changing the status quo. Like, we don't believe in that, really. It's not a Jewish term, status quo. We're doing it because this is the way we always did it. Right? The only reason we believe in Israel, what?
It's so Israeli.
The only reason they believe in status quo is because you have to have something to fall back on, because if we have to fight about it every time, we would destroy each other.
Or maybe we'd just be constantly fighting. We just suppose it's status quo.
That is a status quo. Okay, that's Rashi. Let's just finish the... So, Ashofet Asher Yeh Bayamim Ahem. So the Midrash says explicitly, he says, En lecha Ashofet Ela Biyamecha. You have to reevaluate. The fact that we decided to fight about something or not fight about something, and it's even more, we're going to see a psicha, a halachic psak. The psak changes. It does. Something that was kosher 10 years ago might not be kosher today. Like, could very well be that the rabbis who are leading generation will say in another 6 years, Heter Mechira was appropriate for the last 7 cycles. And it's no longer appropriate. Could be.
Quinoa is kosher for Pesach. Quinoa isn't kosher for Pesach.
Well, right, right.
That's,
do they don't change?
They did, though.
Oh, you said it's not kosher for Pesach?
No. Now they said it is. But
right.
But the previous Pesach.
Or canola oil is not kosher for Pesach. It used to not be kosher for Pesach. And now it is kosher for Pesach.
In South Africa, we used to eat a fish called kinkler.
Mm-hmm. Really?
So now,
But the point is, some people will look at that and ridicule. And I understand why they'll ridicule, but that ridicule is damaging to halacha, and it's most damaging to the people that are ridiculing it, because what it's doing is it is encroaching upon their ability to have faith in chachamim. Rabbis are allowed to change their mind. Why? Because, as we're going to see right away, we're going to see in the Kli Yakar, that there are positions in this direction and positions in that direction, and it could very well be that I used to think this, and now I think that. And that's good. That's important. We don't want a person to say, well, I thought that, so I'm going to still think that. Right? We want him to be evaluated. We want the rabbi to be assessing all the time. You know. Yeah, I used to say that the Pyrex was Milchik, but now I reevaluate, I think it's Pyrex. That's honest. You know what I'm saying? We don't want the person to stick to his guns because I always thought that. I was convinced otherwise. And that's a living Torah, as we're going to see.
Yeah, but then it's not kind of like a science. Then it's like, oh, I think this, you think that, then it could be this way or that way.
Ask you a question. Like, is medicine a science?
Yeah, I think so.
Really? Sometimes they know.
But law is certainly not a science.
Law is not a science.
Right.
It's an application of a law to reality. Even medicine is not a science. The deeper they go, there are certain things that are obvious. It's symptomatic, but when you get more complicated, generally they're just really guessing, and hopefully they're guessing right and hitting most of the problem. What?
Yeah, but this isn't any of those things. This is more important.
Am I wrong? Yeah. Yeah. For really complicated, when it gets, it's very easy. You have an infection, antibiotics. Normally, you go to the doctor. Honestly, they don't really know. It's probably a virus, right? What does that really mean?
They don't know.
I don't know. Right. And that's okay. Because hopefully it'll go away. Oh, Danielle is looking at me like... Piator. Okay, so that's what it says. Asher yeh bayamim ahem. Ve'asita. And you shall do. Al pi hadavar asher yagidu lecha. Based on the matter that they shall tell you. Min hamakom ha'hu asher yivchar Hashem. From that place that God will choose. Ve'shamarta la'asot k'chol asher yarucha. And you should guard to do everything that they should, yorucha, the horot, from the word Torah, okay, yorucha, Torah is teaching. So you'll see, by the way, in the context of, in the course of three psukim, how many times is the Beit HaMikdash mentioned? I'll give you the answer. It's mentioned twice. If you see it in Pasuk Chet, El HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem, to the place that God will choose, and then in Pasuk Yud, Min HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem. Right, that the authority of the Sanhedrin, and the authority from which that is derived is directly connected to the authority of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Beit HaMikdash. Directly connected. Those are inherently connected. And there's a mitzvah aseh to follow the rulings of the Torah. Al pi ha-Torah asher yarucha. Ve'ala mishpat asher yomu lecha ta'aseh. Based on the Torah that they should teach you, and on the mishpat, the justice that they tell you, ta'aseh, do this. Lo tasur min adavar asher yagidu lecha yamin usmo. Do not deviate from the matter which they should tell you, yamin usmo. Right or left? Okay, when you see language like that, you're like, whoa, that's crazy. Yes? Nothing? Yeah, they had a question. Okay. Rashi, everybody familiar with the famous Rashi? Based on the famous Midrash? No? Let's read it. Rashi? Yeah, you like it? Says Rashi, Afilu lomar yecha, even if he tells you, al yamin shu smol, val smol shu yamin. Even if he tells you right is left and left is right, v'choshek ein shomer lecha al yamin yamin val smol smol. Certainly if he tells you right is right and left is left. Yeah? You disagree? What do you mean? Does it really literally mean, other than that, first you have to ask yourself, does Rashi literally mean, if the rabbi says, up is down and down is up, you have to listen to him? Are we talking about facts?
Right and left are matters of perspective. My right is your left, and your left is my right.
Right.
Right. So if the judge is telling you that right is left, it's because he's looking at it from a different perspective.
So you're saying it's not fact. We're not talking about the sky is blue or is not blue. We're not talking about those things. What are we talking about? Are we talking about those things? Meaning, a person who follows Dat Torah, that's what we started with. If the Rav said the sky is green, then the sky is green. It looks blue. That's my own tainted perspective.
And if the Rav tells you not to leave Gush Katif because Hashem will say less than the last minute and you must stay and traumatize your family.
That's Nevuah. If the Rav says not to leave Gush Katif because we need to make a statement about our faith and the importance of this land, I don't know what will happen.
Family,
what?
Like with your small children and
That could be a sheep.
And the Rav said that you must stay there.
Let me ask you a question.
Your children, do you listen or do you say, this to me doesn't make sense?
It all depends on whether you ask the Rav or not. Right?
Well, the Rav makes a statement.
Well, one second. The fact that a rabbi makes a statement, am I bound to that statement necessarily? It's a very interesting question. Am I bound to the statement? Let's say Rav Hillel decided to make a statement. Am I bound by his statement? He's a rabbi of my shul. Am I bound? Quiet. Do I have to listen to everything that Rav Hillel says? By the way, which is why he would never do such a thing. Right? Smart rabbanim, what do? They answer questions. No, they answer questions. Okay. If a Rav said, if you asked the question and said, I want to, like, if I was in Gush Katif, Laura Lane, and somebody asked me that question, I would say, here are the factors involved. Right? And each person has to make a decision for their own children about what they're willing to do and not willing to do. But, I will say, let's say you would say, one of the factors is, I can't promise, any Rav that would say, I promise it's never going to happen, I believe is that's a mistake. Because he's not a Navi. Because if you're a Navi, you know what I'm saying? That's called false nevuah. They were wrong. But a Rav could say, I don't know what's going to happen. I believe we're not going to be kicked out. I believe in this. But even if we are, I believe that it's important to make the statement that we are not leaving here under, and you're going to have to pull us out, yes, even with our children. Why? Because it's our connection to this land. And I promise you, the next time the government thinks about doing this, the trauma that was involved will make it almost unimaginable. And that's true. Your children will pay the price for serving the army for all those people in South Africa that are not. You made that decision. And they think you're crazy.
But
that's all the question of...
No, but then we're making that decision.
Right. You didn't ask your children, do you guys want to serve in the IDF? Did you? When you decided to move here or live here?
We made that decision.
Right. What? Did you? Did they? Did
you?
What?
No.
I said to my son, I was thinking about it, he's starting his hair, I said to him, I said, do you think if I was a big rabbi in America in some big city, do you think he would have gone to the army? He looked at me, he's like, what? And I decided, I didn't think he would. I decided he probably would have come and gone to a Hesed yeshiva and then gone back to YU like I did. So this decision that I made, really, the decision that we all made affects our children. That's what we do. The same thing as the parents in Gush Katif. It's all the same. The question is the rabbi telling you what to do and making predictions that were false? It's like the rabbis who said, don't leave Europe, the Holocaust is not going to happen. That's crazy. You can't say something like that. If you say, don't leave Europe, because the danger of assimilation, of going to America or going to Israel, is greater than the danger that I perceive here, that's a perception question. Yeah, it's not a nevuah question. So they were wrong.
That was a good example of someone being wrong, and maybe those, you shouldn't have listened to them. If someone had said that to you with hindsight, the best thing to do would have been to say, I'm going to do it, I'm going to
do it
anyway.
I'm going to say something you're going to kill me for, really. If you would ask that rabbi, okay, and the choice was, a person goes to America and all his children assimilate and marry goyim, or stay in America and be killed on Kill Achilu Hashem, what would he say the answer? What's better? Do you understand what I'm saying? So in his perspective, if you say, I promise you won't be killed, that's crazy. How does he know? If you say, based on my Shikul HaDat, it's better for a person to live as a Jew and die as a Jew than to go to the Golden of Medina and all their children to become goyim. I'm not gonna. That's a different
Shikul HaDat. Much of an option because America doesn't take too many Jews.
It was a given that people who left Europe were leaving the shtetl in order to abandon the religion, and the rate of assimilation was incredibly high. We don't even know how high it was. You know, the people that just abandoned their Judaism altogether. So
Well, that could have also been because of the Holocaust.
Wanted
abandoned.
That is such a weak argument.
I'm not making the argument. I'm asking you what the rabbi would have said. I'm not making the argument. I know you're going to kill me. It's okay.
The chances of someone, the grandchildren becoming from and coming back to Torah are much greater when they have grandchildren than when they don't. But,
wait, one second. Again, though, if you would look in the sources, right, the choice of life and, like, we live in a culture where life is the most important thing. You're thinking about it, the chance of their grandchildren coming back. But living life versus giving your life to the Ribono Shel Olam, or dedicating your life, devoting your life for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and paying the ultimate price, that's also considered a value in Torah. That life isn't the ultimate value. So who's more correct? Us, with our perspective, with our, you know, Western values, and or Rabbanim, who have been seeped in Torah and spend their time immersed in these things, and are making those value judgments. That's the question. Well, let's look at the Ramban. Okay. Lo ta'aser min ha'davar she'yagidu lecha yamin u'smol. According to the Torah, can they be wrong? In their value judgments. If somebody is really an authority, can they be wrong?
No.
Can't be wrong. Or, not for you, you can't be wrong. You ask the question, don't deviate. So first he quotes Rashi. Okay, Lashon Rashi. See, is yamin u'smol, Ramban on Yud Aleph? Afilo amar lecha yamin u'smol, esmol shu yamin. Lashon Rashi. Rashi is quoting the Midrash. Ve'in yano. Afilu tachshav b'libcha shehem toin. Even if you think they're making a mistake, v'hadavar pashut ve'enecha. Okay, and it's so obvious to you. Kasher ata yodea ben yemincha l'smocha. As like you know the difference between your right and your left. Ta'aseh kemitzvatam. Do what they say. V'al tomar ech ochal chelev agamur hazeh. How could I eat this prohibited fat? Ech o eherog ha'ish anaki hazeh. Like the justice, the court clerk who has to execute, who has to do the execution. This person is innocent. How can I do this? Aval tomar, but say, ko tziva oti ha'adon ha'mitzuva al ha'mitzvot. Right? Demand the person who is commanded on the mitzvot, she'eseh b'chol mitzvotav, ka'asher yoreni ha'omdim lefanav b'makom asher yivchar. So I should do. God told me follow the instructions of these people who are told, who are imparted with this authority. Va'amashmaut da'atam natani ha'Torah. I was given the Torah based on their mashmaut da'atam, based on their intuitive knowledge. Afilu yitu, even if they make a mistake. I'll just explain what that means. Very famous story in the Gemara. Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Gamliel, they got into big fights. Okay, they got into big arguments. They didn't always agree. So it turns out that one of the things they disagreed about was the calculation of the calendar. And Rabbi Yehoshua figured out that according to the calculation of the calendar, his Rosh Hashanah was on Monday, and Rabbi Gamliel said, no, it's on Tuesday. So it just so happened that according to that calculation, Rabbi Yehoshua's Yom Kippur was on 10 days later, whatever it was, Thursday, I don't remember, okay? And Rabbi Gamliel said, no, it's on Friday. And Rabbi Gamliel, who was the Nasi, said to Rabbi Yehoshua, he sent him a message and said, I would like you to come see me with your arnak, with your wallet and your stick on Friday, or whatever, on Thursday. You think it's Yom Kippur? I'm telling you it's not. And you are commanded to adhere to my decision, and Rabbi Yeshua did it. Now, can you understand why? Why?
Because he's the authority.
And what happens if you don't adhere to his authority?
Civil war.
Anarchy. Okay. Now, the question is this only Rabbanim who have the authority? Is this an issue of authority? Or is it an issue of also faith? Like the Ramban doesn't seem to... Let's look at the Ramban. V'atzorach bezeh, mitzvah azo, gadol me'od. The need for this mitzvah is very great. Ki ha-Torah natnan lanu bichtav. The Torah was written bichtav. V'yadua hu shelo yishavu ha-deyot v'chol ha-debarim ha-noladim. It's impossible that everybody agrees. We're individuals, we're human beings. The Torah is written. If you go in the written Torah, it has to be interpreted. And people don't agree on everything. V'hine yirbu ha-machlakot. Right, the arguments will increase. V'taseh ha-Torah kama Torot. The Torah will become many Torot. V'chetach lanu ha-katuv ha-din. Shenishma le-beitin ha-gadol ha-omeh lifnei Hashem. So the Torah made a decision. Listen to the beitin ha-gadol. Asher yivchar v'chol ma sheyomru lecha b'feirush ha-Torah. Whatever they decide in the interpretation of the Torah. Okay? Bein shekiblu perusho eid mipi eid u'moshe mipi agbura. Whether they interpreted it, they received transmission from Moshe. O shiomru kefi lifi mashma'ut ha-mikra o kavanata. Or they're interpreting based on the interpretation, the implication of the Torah. It's a very important line. Ki al hada'at shelahem hu noten lahem et ha-Torah. I'm going to read that line again. Al hada'at shelahem, based on their knowledge and intuition, he gives them the Torah. Even if you think they're turning right and left and left and right. You should certainly think, no, when they say right, don't say, I think left. If they say right, it must be right. This is the critical line. I mean, if you have it, it's worth seeing here. Look over here. Kiruach Hashem. Ki ruach Hashem al mesharteh mikadsho, because the Spirit of God is instilled in those who serve His holiness. V'lo ya'azov et chasidav, God will not abandon His saintly followers. Le'olam nishmeru min hata'ut u'min hamikshol, and they will always be saved from mistake and from stumbling.
If they listen,
what?
They'll be saved. If
no. What's the implication? What's Ramban not implying? What's he saying?
That they won't make mistakes, that Hashem will...
And if they make a mistake?
Isn't they make a mistake? It's Hashem
that the people won't have.
If they make a mistake, it's not a mistake.
Exactly. That's what Hashem wanted. Mm.
Correct.
That's why they make a mistake.
Correct.
So if they were told not to leave, then that's what Hashem wanted.
Maybe.
The question also is,
maybe.
Who really gets the title of his chassidim, and who really, you know, at a moment when politics and religion are intertwined, is it really possible for someone to stay so totally pure without ego and without agendas and without influences? You know, it could be that they're factors at play that this is...
I have a question. Why do you think that when they were sitting there, from whatever we've heard about Jewish history, when is there never politics? Who is not influenced by politics?
Okay, well, and that's why...
But they are extreme.
Kohanim
were... Kohanim weren't influenced by politics? Levim weren't
influenced? Shoftim weren't influenced? I mean, that's the Beit Mikdash was destroyed and the Kohanim were expelled from the city and the, you know...
Yeah. It's complicated, but nonetheless, it seems to be now the other question I would ask is different. What happens nowadays when there's no Lishkat HaGazit? Right? If we believe that there's a spiritual connection, is this only in when there's a Beit HaMikdash and they're sitting in that place and they have literally Hashra'at HaShchina?
And they were in Bitumim also.
They would not ask Urim Bitumim for halakha. I can give you a share on Urim Bitumim, but you know, they would never ask Urim Bitumim what's the halakha. That's against the halakha to say what's the deen. We don't turn to God to ask halakha. What? Lo b'shamayim. Or you could say, when you have Lishkat HaGazit, you go to Lishkat HaGazit. But otherwise, great rabbis have a certain intuition. This is the concept of that Torah.
There's an inyan of like a selecha rav. You should choose your rabbi. The moment you chose your rabbi, you have to follow what anyone tells you to do.
No.
If you have a question, if you ask a question.
Correct. Agreed.
If he makes a statement, then you can always question it.
Correct.
If you ask him a direct question and he answers you, you're supposed to do whatever you talk
about. Lo tasur. Absolutely correct.
There are a lot of people who would say if he makes a statement, even if it wasn't in response to your direct question, if he's your Rav, you also have to follow.
Really?
Yeah.
That's why you have to choose your Rav carefully. Right? I think that's why it's a good idea to choose your Rav carefully. Okay. I also want to bring Kli Yakar and then I'll show you the Rambam and then we'll stop.
Yeah. Difference between your Rav and here where it's saying the word is golden, but it's also talking about the time when there was a Beit HaMikdash. Like, I feel like it keeps referring to the Beit HaMikdash.
Yes.
Right? So, to me, it seems like I understand all this from left and right. He's talking about the Sanhedrin and the Beit HaMikdash. Is it meant to be applied to non-Sanhedrin, not Beit HaMikdash times?
That's a debate.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, that's a matter of great debate. What would Ramban say?
Yes.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's just that we kept pulling up the words.
So then the question becomes, when we live in a time of Galut and there's no Beit HaMikdash, do we believe that, however, there's still Hashrat Shechina on a smaller level, on a more minor level? Or do we say they're separate from that and those rules don't apply? Right? It's all a question of degree. It's all a question of interpretation. But it's a challenging question. Kli Yakar says something very interesting. Yeah, go ahead.
Along Shira's line of thought, like it could be that we're not only talking about Hashrat Shekhinah, we're talking about centralized Judaism. In a time of centralized Judaism, when there's one word, right, and when there's one center, and when there's one way to worship, then everybody should fall in line.
Mm-hmm.
When there isn't centralized Judaism, then everybody has to, by definition, sort of a little bit go their own way. There's no chief rabbinate for the world anymore. That's what it was. It was like a world chief rabbinate.
Well, there should be. Shouldn't there?
I don't know. Maybe that's what it's saying. I mean, should there be a Beit HaMikdash? There should be a Beit HaMikdash.
In the ideal situation, the government has a question. This is an issue of the train station. The train is very fascinating because the question they ask us is, what do you Orthodox really want to do? Right? Really? You want to shut down the train? Great. What about the electricity? What about the water? What, you really think nobody's working to provide you electricity on Shabbat? You know, you want to shut down the whole country? No street lights on Friday nights? Like, what's your solution? You know what I'm saying? And so in our ideal solution, there should be a Rabbanut HaRashid. And when the government has a question, so the government turns to the government wants to keep Shabbat. It wants to do the right thing. And it turns to the Rabbanut HaRashid and says, okay, here's the issue. Tell us what we should do. And then give us the halachic decision, and then we'll decide politically what's better. Wednesday night, Thursday night, Yom HaAtzma'ut, Saturday, you know what I'm saying? We'll make that decision. Isn't that the ideal? Shouldn't there be one Rabbanu? Isn't that what we aspire to?
That's what the Supreme Court is filling in that void.
Correct, but I don't want the Supreme Court based on British law.
The Supreme Court isn't determining it according to halacha.
The Supreme Court is not interested in Shabbat.
They are making the final decision, because in the end, Netanyahu said, I will respect whatever the Supreme Court decides, and the Supreme Court said it will continue on Shabbat.
Right.
But that's not that place.
That court is not in that place. You know what I'm saying? It's not that place. Okay, I want to bring Kli Yakar and Rambam. And you know, it is really great matter for thought because it's a great question. It really is an important question for each of us. Like the idea of Emunat Chachamim, like bottom line is we like the Ramban he formalized it very well. Our religion is a rabbinic religion. Not partially, totally. The Torah the Torah Shebichtav that we put in the Aron Kodesh is it's not vague, it's explicit, but it has to be interpreted, it has to be applied. And its application is totally dependent on rabbinic interpretation. Everything we do is rabbinic. Almost nothing we do is d'oraita. All of the gzerot, all the extensions, all the whatever. The more question we have, the less faith we have in rabbinic Judaism, in the authority of rabbanim, the greater our tendency to stray from it. And the greater our tendency to lose that adherence in all areas. And so this is something, you know, tshuva is not just, oh, I shouldn't have eaten that, I shouldn't have done that. But tshuva is something about attitudes, about faith. And it's not always, I'm not saying, by any stretch, I have to believe in Da'at Torah now. What I am saying is, do I have faith in, like when I ask a question, or do I ask questions? Do I have faith in, have I found somebody who I really have faith in that when he says something, I listen to? Like, do I have that sense of adherence on the level of Da'at Torah that I believe in? Which is, I think, a legitimate question. And that's a good question. That's a good thing to do tshuva for. Like, you know, because really nobody's forcing us to ask the question. And that's really up to us. That's an individual question. Kli Yakar says the following. He says, and we're not going to read it, he says something very fascinating. He says, in every area of halacha, he says, in the Sanhedrin, they didn't appoint anyone to the Sanhedrin until Yodea Letaher HaSheretz Min HaTorah. Until he knew how to take a sheretz, which is Midoraita Tameh, and make it Tahor. I.e., someone who knows the law understands that the Supreme Court can turn the law around and make right into left. Why? He says, because sometimes you have to do that. Lifamim tzrichim hora'at sha'a lifsok neged ha-Torah. Sometimes you have to rule against the Torah, mishum eit la'asot la'ashem hefeiru tarata. A very fascinating concept. That, yes, the Torah says this, but sometimes we have to deviate from it in order to further the interest of the Torah, further the interest of Judaism. Like, that's a very fascinating question vis-a-vis the train and the state and what have you. Very fascinating question.
Statement.
Yes.
Weren't there a lot of stories, like from the shtetl, that someone would come to the rab and say, is this chicken kosher? And he would say, whose family is
But that's, no, that's not Eitlash or Lashon. That's not, it's treif and I'm making it kosher. Right? There are gradations in all areas of Jewish law. There are gradations of chumrah and kula. So the rabbi has to know, who am I asking for? Who's asking? Because I need to know what level of chumrah I'm going to give you. I did a wedding last night. It was great. The mashgiach came out. He said, like, it was really great. It was so wonderful. The whole thing was kosher. He said, but the meat is rabbanut regila, and the vegetables are gush katif, and you can have that. So I had sushi. It was fine. You know what I'm saying? But, and I respected that he said that. I don't think that everybody has to adhere to my level of chumrah that I'm comfortable with, and I don't think it's not kosher. Perfectly kosher. That's not this. We're coming to the rabbi saying, there's a rabbi who says, who got up, and you know, you're familiar with the story, that there was like a typhus thing in Yom Kippur, and I think it was Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, he got up and said in Yom Kippur, this is a dangerous time, everybody has to eat today, and you got to be made kiddush and shul on Yom Kippur. That's eight lasot l'Hashem in favor. That's psak. You know? And so that's what the Kli Yakar says. He says, sometimes he has to go against the Torah. Az yachol chacham b'tzarev svarat eight lasot l'Hashem, Otan mi'ut svarot shekvar nidchu, says most people are machmir, some people are mekil. So normally we're machmir, but I have to be mekil in this case, because there are extenuating circumstances. So what I say that would extend to, if there's a traffic jam, there's a greater chance that people will become danger, the life in danger. You know, I don't need the Supreme Court making halachic decisions. Let's understand that it's not halacha, but nonetheless, right? They have to use their shikul dat, their knowledge and their understanding, in order to interpret the Torah. One more thing, we're just the Rambam. The Rambam starts Hilchot Mamrim. Mamrim are those who don't follow the Torah. So the Rambam says the following: Beit Din Hagadol, the beginning of Hilchot Mamrim. Beit Din Hagadol Yushalayim, the great court in Yushalayim. Ikar Torah Shebal Peh. They are the essence of Torah Shebal Peh. Heim Amudei HaHorah. They are the pillars of teaching. And from them, chok u'mishpat, all the rule goes. And about them, the Torah said, "Al piya Torah asher yorucha." This is our pasuk, based on the Torah that they teach you. Zu mitzvat aseh. And I'm going to say this formulation. This is the formation of the Rambam. V'chol ha'ma'amin b'Moshe Rabbeinu u'v'Torato. If you believe in Moshe and his Torah, chayav lismoch ma'aseh hadat aleihem. You have to assume, to rely in areas of religion on them, ulihisha'in alehim, and to rely on them. So Rambam was talking about Chazal. Right? And the Chazal had the power and the koach to interpret, and their interpretation is authoritative, without which you don't have anything. The question, of course, is, to what degree does the Rambam's the rule extend to today? Etc., etc. The Rambam, if we had it inside, I would share with you. I'm not going to read it to you inside. But the Rambam said it applies to drashot, it applies to takanot, it applies to minhagim. Okay? He says, apia torasher yorucha, de pasuk, what does it mean? Elu takanot ugzerot v'aminhagot, decrees, gzerot, takanot, minhagim, sheyerubem lerabim kedei lechazek hadat ulatakein ha'olam. It's broad, it's wide-ranging. The Torah gave the sages wide latitude to establish Torah law. Not just, you know, we should do it, but this is part of religious law. And that falls under the rubric of Apiyat Torah Sheyaruchah. So ironically, if you don't follow a Deoraita, all right. And like if a person says, I don't want to put on tefillin. Okay, you don't put on tefillin. That's a problem. But if a person says, I think my tefillin should have 5 batim. The rabbis were wrong. I don't like their tefillin. I'm going to put tefillin with white straps. Right? That's not only not fulfilling mitzvah of tefillin, but that's a violation of Al-Pi Al-Torah Sheyer Rufa. And in some ways, that's more dangerous than others. All right. We have food for thought. A lot of food for thought. Have a good week.